This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
With a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to read a good book. And I am so happy to welcome to Joy on Paper today Ebony Liddell, because I love her book. It is, and I love the title of her book, because it is called Love Radio. I mean, could you get a better title? Hi, Ebony.
Hi, how are you? Thank you for having me.
Oh, this is a thrill for me. I'm just so happy. I've been, you know, I got your book. I always get these books, you know, well ahead of time. And it's been so much fun. I've had it right there on the corner of my reading chair, because I love the cover. And I mean, what can you say when a book is called Love Radio?
Thank you. Thank you so much.
It is cool. It's one of the best YA books I have read all year. It's just fantastic. So you have to tell me all about it. What I love about it, you're so witty and so charming and so delightful, and it comes through in this story.
Oh, thank you so much. I've had a lot of good practice. I have a lot of charming people in my life, so it makes it easy to put it on the page.
Well, tell us about the story, about the main character, and just about yourself, because I think a lot of this personality, I have a feeling, is you.
So yeah, Love Radio is about two teens, Danny Ford, who is an aspiring writer, who is laser-focused on moving to the big city to pursue her dream, and Prince Jones, a local Detroit DJ and love expert, who is looking to pursue her. And so they have a rocky meet-cute. But then he convinces her to go on three dates and sparks fly. So that's the book. And a little bit about me. I have worked in publishing for over 10 years. This is my first book. I am from the Detroit area, so that's why I wrote about the city of Detroit in the novel. And, yeah, there's a little bit of both of me and both characters. But it's really a story about family and community and love for all of those things, and love for your city and love for yourself. And so it was also really fun, like, putting elements of my family and my friends in the story as well.
And, of course, I do love the Detroit aspect, because I grew up in Detroit. When I was in third grade, we moved to Detroit, and I lived in Highland Park on Glendale Avenue.
Most definitely.
And so you know where that is. And I loved it. It was so wonderful. I had such a wonderful, wonderful childhood in Detroit. Of course, I spent a great deal of time when I got to be a teenager. I spent a great deal of time skipping school, because I spent I spent all my time in the Museum of Art downtown.
That's amazing. Yeah, I have the same story. I have a very fond love of the city. I actually got the concept of Love Radio because I thought of the times that me and my mom would drive in the car in the morning and listen to all the radio shows, including like Mason in the Morning. We listened to Ricky Smiley, and I was just thinking about like the love advice they would give on the show that wasn't that great, and like the pranks and the celebrity gossip. And I just thought it would be really cool if Prince Jones was the one giving out love advice as a teenage boy and like just killing it, you know?
Well, I thought so, too. And I was, as I'm reading it, I'm imagining myself driving down Woodward Avenue.
Yeah, exactly.
I used to love that. Well, you know, when I was a teenager, of course, I was a little bit wild. We used to do that. As a matter of fact, we drove down Woodward Avenue, and we would form like a line of four of us in a line and slow the traffic down behind us and have our radios blaring, because we always had a great radio stations in Detroit.
Exactly. You had to. That's a rite of passage, obviously.
So I love that aspect. I love, just, it reminded me of all sorts of wonderful times I had in Detroit. And I thought that's cool. I thought that was cool. But the whole idea, I think, is wonderful. so many things about it. I love the wittiness of it. I love that you have this sharp, you know, you notice things and you really hone in on things. And whether it's about hair, I love that thing about being in the rain. tell us some of this, some of the things that you've put into this book that really I think people will relate to, because I thought that was hilarious.
So, yeah, I had a lot. I wanted the book to be witty because I think of teenagers. I think of myself as a teenager. And even though I was a shy teenager, I tend to hang around a lot of extroverts. And I also was inspired by a lot of the 90s and 2000s black romances that came out, and how that wit and that banter was so important. It's such an important part of the story. Me being a black person is such an important part of black culture. Like some of the things, like you said, your hair, like natural women with curly hair, when we get it straight, the last thing we want to do is get caught in the rain. And it was little elements that I wanted to put throughout the story, so that if a teenager is reading it from Detroit, they feel like, oh my God, this is me. You know, like this love story is my love story, because I think of Love and Basketball. That was my love story growing up, even though it was a movie about, you know, it was a movie marketed towards adults. That was my coming of age story, because, you know, there are stories like 10 Things I Hate About You and movies like that. But the black teenage girl was always the side character. And I wanted, you know, to show a black teenage girl that we can be swept off our feet too. We can have the grand romances that we see on TV. So it was really fun writing that. And I had to make sure that I put those witty moments in there, because that's part of, you know, what I was used to seeing growing up, and I'm sure a lot of teenagers are used to seeing now growing up. I mean, think of, like, how witty TikTok is. You know, think of people who get on there and they could, like, literally create movies the way that they'll have us laughing, you know, for hours on end. So that's what I wanted to put in the story.
Well, I found it, now, as I said, I got it, I think maybe 6 months ago, a long time ago. And we were still in the middle of the pandemic, and I was getting a lot of pandemic books. Oh, my gosh. I got so many And then I get this book. Beautiful cover. Isn't it a lovely cover?
Thank you. I love that cover so much. I'm obsessed with it.
And so I just, you know, I just, of course, had to pick it up. And then, of course, the Detroit element. But it was the wit that got me. And I needed that. I was so tired of pandemic, and I didn't want to hear one more thing about, you know, anything like that. And just having... I think that's going to be a word that will be sort of always there with your writing, witty. And I think that's a wonderful thing, because so many people are just like, I mean, really? how can I say?
Say that, because, you know, it's funny you say that, because, and first of all, thank you for saying that, because I also work in the publishing industry, one of the things that can annoy me sometimes is when a book has to have a certain type of cadence in order to be taken seriously. And I don't think that's fair. You know, like, you can be witty and smart and grounded and down to earth. You can be all those things and have that, you know, into a story. And I think for young writers who are looking to write and might feel discouraged because they're like, oh, I don't have the proper training and I don't have this. Like, you got to trust your gut. You know, you have to trust the story that you want to write, and you have to put that out there, because I think it comes across. And when you were talking about the pandemic, I actually wrote Love Radio, in 2019 in the top of 2020. And so I felt the same way. There was so much, you know, hurt and pain in the world that, like, I didn't want to read a pandemic book. I wanted to read something joyful. And so when I was seeing on my timeline people from Detroit who were passing away from COVID and, you know, disparities with the healthcare system and how people weren't getting proper healthcare, it was a bomb. You know, it was really helpful and therapeutic writing all this joy about a city that was going through so much at the time.
Well, you know, there are many reasons I love you. One, because of the name of the book, but also notice how many times you use the word joy and joyful.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I always end my emails always, you know, have a joy-filled day. And so I get that from you, and I got that when I was reading the book, and I was... When I realized that it's your first book, I mean, I was thinking, wow, you know, what's she been doing all these years? But obviously preparing. And I know that this is your first visit to Joy on Paper, but you're going to be back many times. As a matter of fact, I was thinking I would like you to come back and we can do a half an hour, and you can talk about actually how you got into publishing, some of the trends in publishing. So perhaps you could give me another half an hour and come back during the summer and we can talk about that?
I would absolutely love that. Thank you. It's an honor, of course.
Okay, so we're going to plan that. I'm going to get it all organized, and we're going to have a whole sort of half hour of joy-filled about the writing. My goddaughter, Kanisha, a few years ago, she said, you know, she was doing NaNoWriMo. She had done it many years, and she's a writer. Of course, she's, you know, also working, but she's writing all the time. And so she finally convinced me to do NaNoWriMo, and I was so happy. And so I think it's so important that we get out there and we talk about the fun and the joy of writing.
Of course.
And so you're going to be back, and we're going to have you back in July, okay?
Okay, that sounds great. Thank you.
Okay, so meanwhile, everybody, I want everyone to get this book. It's wonderful. It's called Love Radio. And tell us a little bit where they can find you and, you know, all of that kind of the stuff.
Yeah, so I am online on TikTok, Instagram, Twitter, Ebony Liddell. You can find me, find out more about me at ebonyliddell.com, and you can find this book wherever books are sold. So your local independent bookstore, Barnes & Noble, Target, Amazon, anywhere and everywhere.
Okay, well, that's wonderful. And your website is very interesting. And what do you have there that you want people to see?
Oh, well, if you, as you know, the tour is wrapping up and there are more events, if you want to come see me live, summer is upon us, and I'm able to fortunately do some events, so I'll have information up about that. I'll have information up about some of the media and all those things. And whenever book two comes about, you'll learn more, and I also have a newsletter, so I'll be keeping my fans updated on what's going on.
Well, that's wonderful, and I'm sure you're working on book two by now, right?
Yes, I am.
Well, isn't that joy on paper? Once you see your words on paper, you can't stop.
Yeah, it's an addiction for sure. I always said, like, okay, I'll write a couple books and we'll see what happens. And then I turn around and I'm like, oh, this could be interesting. I'm going to try that out. I'm going to play with this. So we'll see what happens. But it is very inspiring to be able to constantly be inspired to write more. So,
and I will enjoy reading more things about Detroit. I love when you put things in about Detroit. I am, of course, you know, once you live in Detroit, my teams are still Detroit. I mean, I'm a Tigers fan. I can't help it. I live in hope for the Lions. I don't know. It's pretty hopeless, don't you think?
No comment.
No comment. Well, so. But it is a fun place, and I always tell people, you know, they say to me, well, did you like living in Detroit? And I say, there's something special about it. There really is, isn't there?
Something special, yeah. That's the best way to describe it. There is something very unique about that city that will always have me. And, you know, I love to pursue other things, but that city will always have a special place in my heart. And so it was only right that the first book I published was the first book that, you know, showed the city that, you know, gave me my love for reading. And I'm always thankful for that. And it's fun also to be able to incorporate my second love, which is music, into the story as well.
Well, you did it all. You combined it all. And I want to say also you combine this love of family. And I thought perhaps that is the heart of the book in the end. Mm-hmm. All of the other things, mm-hmm. the wit, the charm, everything else, and the music. But at the heart of it, it's this wonderful love that obviously you have for your family and that you want mm-hmm. people to feel. And so that's why I think this book is something really special and one that I know that people will enjoy. It's called Love Radio, and I love the book. And I want to, again, thank you so much, Ebony Liddell, for being on Joy on Paper today. You are delightful.
Thank you so much, Toriyu, and I look forward to talking to you again.
Okay. I'm going to send you a date. We'll have you back here in July, okay?
Perfect. I can't wait.
Okay. Bye-bye now. Bye.
Bye.
Oh, she's so sweet. Oh, I love this book. It's so much fun. Okay. Just waiting for a minute. I think we have a minute before. I'm going to be talking in a to well, I'm going to be talking about trees, and everybody knows that I love talking about trees. So that's going to be just in a minute. Meanwhile, I want to mention that Bill Larson is going to be on in a few weeks, and I really love when you send me questions for him about intellectual property. And thank you, all of you, the ones who are planning to do sort of character-driven stories where you have a character and that you hope one day might be a stuffed animal. Isn't that fun when you come out with a character and you think maybe this will be the one, the next one that will turn into a stuffed animal kind of thing for you. But remember something, when you do that, don't just say, some of you have done this. Well, one of you did it. I'm going to say it once and some. One of you did it, and you sent it off to some country, I won't mention the name, and you asked them, well, you asked them to make your character, and they made your character, but they made your character, and they sold it to like a zillion people. So you want to make sure that before you send your characters off to be done. Is she on? Okay, I'm just waiting for my next call, and I hope that she's going to be. But meanwhile, remember, Bill Larson of Larson & Larson will be here. If you have an intellectual property question, please let me know, and send me an email at patsy.radio@gmail.com. Is my guest on, Ed? No? Okay, we're waiting. I'm just waiting again. This is always fun. Okay, what can I do? I'm hoping that she will call in a few minutes, and then once she is on the line, I can talk about trees, because I love to talk about trees. Oh, my brother, I cannot believe it. What is the date today? It is June 2nd. My brother sent me a picture on Sunday, and he went out. He was walking out in the forest behind our house, because we still have our house, and we have our forest, because we have not cut it down. My brother sells 4 trees a year to pay the taxes, and that's it. The rest of the time, we just let the trees grow, and they've been growing, well, they've been growing ever since our family got the place, I think, in 1906. And he was walking along, and he got to this little crest in a hill, and he looked, and there's still snow on the ground. May 31st. So he took a photo and he said, my goodness, that's the first time he still had snow on the ground on May 31st. So it was a very long winter for him, but it was wonderful. He spent his time. Unfortunately, because of the crazy weather this year, they did not make maple syrup. Now, normally we would be making maple syrup all the way back in March. We would, you know, be tapping the trees, and then my brother and my sister-in-law, they have a sleigh, and they actually go from tree to tree and tapping the trees. And this year they couldn't do it because the winter was so really strange. You know, it was really cold, and long, long periods of heavy snow that they couldn't tap the trees this year. So we don't get fresh maple syrup like every year about this time. I get my order in, and I get all this maple syrup, and nothing this year because we just couldn't do it. It was just a crazy, crazy winter.
When you tap the tree, does it damage the tree at all?
Oh, no. You tap them year after year. They just tap it. It drips out.
How much do you get out of a full tree?
Oh, not all. Not a lot. It takes a lot of trees to get. We're lucky if we get 50. Yeah, we get about 50 bottles of maple syrup in a good year. But this year, nothing. They could never get to the trees at the right time. And you have to have it just timed perfectly. So it was not good for our maple syrup. But, it's a fun thing to do. Hard work, very hard work, because you take a sleigh. You can't really drive among the trees. Because
do you have to do anything to the syrup after it's out?
Oh, yeah. It's a cooking process. It's a big cooking process. Yeah, we cook it. We have a special.
I didn't know if you just ran under and put your mouth on the spigot or what.
Oh, no. It doesn't work that way. doesn't work that way. But it's a lot of fun, but hard work. It's really back-breaking work, but it's worth it. And because we love maple syrup, and so I grew up with trees. And when I talk about trees, I know what I'm talking about. But I don't know as much as Dr. Meg Lohman, because Dr. Meg Lohman is like the world's tree expert. Hi, Dr. Meg.
Hey, so nice to be with you. Oh, my gosh.
Oh, wow. Oh, wow. I was just telling everybody that, you know, I'm from northern Michigan, and I grew up in a forest. And I still, we literally, our family has a forest in northern Michigan.
Oh, that's like having your own pot of gold.
It is. It is. And my brother cuts down only 4 trees a year to pay the taxes.
Oh, my gosh. That's so wonderful. What a great story. Well, I guess you sort of know my story. I love all the trees all around the world.
I know. You are amazing. So you are called the first global arbornaut. Wow.
Did you ever even hear of that word before?
I didn't, but boy, oh boy, I thought that is the coolest title of all.
Well, it's funny because, you know, and I talk to kids, which I do all the time, and I just was on a school talk, which is why I was a minute late, forgive me. But, you know, I say to the kids, astronauts go to outer space and aquanauts explore undersea, but arbornauts explore the tops of trees. And it is, then it makes sense to them why this word arbornaut.
Well, I think it's great. And, of course, you've also been called the Einstein of treetops. Yeah, you got it. You have a lot of great titles there.
Well, maybe because I was the first. And, you know, this is so funny to think that for, you know, chemistry's thousands of years old, and we even did marine biology and invented scuba gear in the 1950s, but it wasn't until the 1980s that I made that crazy little slingshot and fired a rope over a tree branch, and we found out that half the species on Earth live in the top of our trees. It's this amazing continent right above our heads.
Oh, it is. Well, as I said, because I love trees and I know trees, but not the kind of trees that you climb. I mean, you are like all over the world, every place.
Well, you know, it sort of is. I'll be very honest, but when I was little, I didn't know girls could even become scientists. I just loved trees. And then I did become a scientist. So one thing led to another. You know, I worked on tree disease in Australia, and that led me to come back and look at gypsy moth in North America. And that led me to go off and look at disease in Africa. So just, you never know, do you, about how things happen in life.
Wow, that's true. It is amazing what can happen to you. And for me, one of the things that happened to me is because my life changed because of National Geographic magazines. For us up north, that was our lifeline to the world. We didn't know, maybe we really were in the trees. We were really in the forest. But then we would get that National Geographic magazine, and we would spend our time going through it and learning about the world. And that's why I'm always so honored to have National Geographic people on. First of all, because you're all a bunch of very happy people.
Well, I guess that's good about discovery, isn't it? And all humans are curious. And I always say to kids, you know, ask questions, be curious, and follow your passion. And then they, too, might end up being a National Geographic explorer.
Oh, yeah. If I was going back on it, that's what I would have told my kids to do. Oh, you know, it's nice to be a doctor, a lawyer, and all of that. But the ones who have the most fun, I think, are the National Geographic people, because they're doing something that not only do they love, but that's so much fun.
It is true. And I was just like you. Those magazines inspired me when I was little. In fact, I never even heard of a rainforest in school until college, but I did see a couple pictures in those beautiful yellow magazines and thought, whoa, those trees look big.
And now, of course, we have this wonderful, the series every year it comes out, but we have the new almanac for 2023. Tell us about it, because it is really, as always with National Geographic, I mean, what can you say? It's perfect.
It is great, you know, and it's so full of cool facts and, of course, the fabulous pictures that National Geographic always has, and all kinds of neat things that kids can do by themselves, or parents can do with kids, or kids can take this almanac in the car on a long trip, or they can hole up in a tree maybe and read the book. But it does have this year a special theme of forests, and every year they do pick a theme. Last year was oceans, and this year there will be prizes given to kids who write a fabulous essay called Me as a Tree, and maybe send in a selfie of me as a tree. So they all have to turn to page 113 and hear about what the homework is. But it's a fun assignment, not anything like they might otherwise think of homework. It's a great project, and I think that every kid will have fun with it.
Oh, it is a wonderful project, and every kid will have fun with this book, and the parents too, by the way.
Yes. I'm giving this to a lot of adults. I think, you know, it's called a kid's almanac, but honestly, I think big kids as well as little kids will love it.
Oh, once you get this in your hands, as a matter of fact, you're going to have to... The kids are going to have to fight to get it out of their parents' hands because you can't put it down. It's one page after another of, well, as always, the photographs are great, but also the subjects. I love how you cover such a wide range of subjects, and you can pick up the book at any place, and whether it's, you know, civil rights or women in history or, you know, there's always something there that is going to intrigue you.
It is true. And you can pick it up one page at a time, and it makes perfect sense. I like books like that because you can learn a thing from every single minute that you spend with it.
It enriches your life. It really and truly does. I was thinking about it, of course, from your point of view, all the tree parts were wonderful.
Right. And there are, you know, so many of the animals, even the tiger on the front, needs trees. Some things live in the trees, like on the back cover where they have a beautiful koala eating eucalyptus leaves. But even a tiger needs the forest canopy for safety, for raising its young, for finding its prey on the forest floor. So there's all kinds of ways that you can link forest to just about every single animal in that book.
Did you ever have a sort of close encounter of an unexpected kind with an animal there up at the top of the...
I did. This is very funny, but in Panama, I was actually filming a children's broadcast show for National Geographic, and suddenly I was surrounded by monkeys, and they were throwing branches at me, and that was a little frightening, and it turned out I had just opened my sandwich. I was just taking a rest in the treetops to eat my little lunch, and I think the monkeys smelled my tuna fish, and they wanted it, and it was hilarious. They were almost stalking me, so I decided to sacrifice the sandwich, and I dropped it on the forest floor, and they all went and grabbed it. But to be honest, in the canopy, most things are so wonderfully safe. Everybody, or everything, I should say, doesn't have fear of humans because they're not used to seeing me up there. So I can get really close up with sloths or with koalas, or even the birds don't seem to be very much afraid.
What's the tallest tree you've climbed?
I guess it would have to be a very important family of trees called the dipterocarps, and you might never have heard of them, but they're the biggest family of trees over in Asia and Southeast Asia. They get 350 feet tall, similar to our redwoods in terms of height, because that's another tall one that I've climbed. But those are exceptions. That's pretty tall for trees. Most trees, of course, in North America are only 50 to 100 feet tall, and most rainforest trees are about 150 to 200 feet tall, but getting over 300 feet means you're just an absolute giant in the tree world.
Wow. Wow. Now, one of the things I know, there are so many fascinating animals that are covered in this book, but let's talk for a minute about this rat, this Cambodian rat, for goodness sakes.
Oh, my gosh. Can you believe it? There's something for everyone in terms of that. And, of course, there are endangered species and common species, and I have never studied those species. As you know, 50% of the world's species live in the treetops, and we know less than 10% of them. So for a lot of those animals, we have some pictures but almost no information. We need kids to grow up and become arbornauts.
Oh, that's wonderful. It's a great idea. And it's just having that background, living in the trees, growing up in the trees. For me, the greatest sound in the world is the sound of the wind going through birch trees. I love that more than anything.
Oh, what a lovely thought. You just made me all wistful for a minute.
Well, I have a recording, a one-hour recording of birch trees. And when I need it, when I need to calm down, I will put that on and I will just sit back in my chair and remember my hundreds, thousands of hours that I spent growing up really as a wild child in the trees. So,
parents need to know, you know, there's been a lot of technical, scientific links between kids going out in the forest and how they do in school and their mental health. Like, it's a really, really important part of life, isn't it, to hear the wind in forests and to go to nature. And for kids, I think it's very important in this day and age of technology to make sure they get enough nature in their world.
Well, I think that the work that you're doing of really encouraging kids to study science, because that's so important that they understand how much fun it is. It's just, you're never bored. Your entire life is filled with learning if you're interested in science.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I especially love to encourage girls in science because I know that was not the case for me when I was little. And I love to encourage any kind of minority groups that might think there's not a place for them, because we need to be inclusive and we need lots of different voices to solve all the problems of the planet. And I think kids have all that innovative, creative energy, and hopefully they will be our future.
Well, I agree. They absolutely have to get involved in nature, and I think it's wonderful what National Geographic is doing. Of course, now it's wonderful also that now that we're sort of getting over the pandemic, that you can get out there and meet people again.
Absolutely. Thankfully. Well, it's always possible to get into nature by yourself, even if you have some kind of scary pandemic around you. But I think it's better now that we can visit schools and maybe schools can have field trips and do all those great things.
Well, it is important. One of the things that I've always, I homeschooled my kids. And so when I did that, I took them out to the, you know, we either studied on the beach or we went to the park or we went to, you know, somewhere where we could be in nature. And I think it helped them a lot to, one of the things really to just be able to think. So often nowadays, kids are bombarded with all this electronics that there's no quiet time. Even for reading, they're reading, but there's a television on somewhere in the house, you know?
Yeah.
But if you're outside reading, it's a different experience.
It is. That's a really wonderful thought. And even a kid can sit under a tree and read this almanac or anything else they need to do. It would be a lovely kind of idea.
And the almanac, it's filled with so many wonderful the stories and all the information that I think will intrigue children, where they can find things. And I have a feeling a lot of kids are going to read this and say, well, you know, let's get out and do some of this. Let's go out and see some of this.
I love especially the part 20 things to make you happy. And one of them is go pick a flower. It says not in your neighbor's garden, which is very sweet, but maybe a little wildflower, maybe something along the roadside. I remember as a kid how exciting it was to find a brand new pink daisy or a purple violet in May. And oh my gosh, I just wish I were a kid all over again.
Oh, one of the things I wanted to ask you, because you've done trees all over the world, but particularly in India, tell us about some of the trees in India while I have a few minutes.
Oh, my gosh. Well, first of all, you know, India has 20% of its forest conserved, which is fabulous for a country. But they're mostly locked up because it has such a large population of human beings, over a billion people. So they're struggling in India to figure out how to share the forest with kids in the city that live in some of those big cities like Delhi or Calcutta. But when they get out there, they are fabulous. They have all these beautiful fig trees, for example, which are sacred for many of their religions in India. So they are so honored they have a tree in a village and they protect it really well. So I always love the fact that India has so much respect for its trees, but they do have this current challenge of making sure the city kids can get to trees, and that's one of the things I'm excited to work in India with some of my Indian colleagues to share the trees with a broader scope of the population over there. Lots of medicinal plants, too. All the trees have different medicinal values that they've studied over many generations. So it's a fabulous country to see trees if you just make sure you get out of the big cities.
Well, I was supposed to go to India during the pandemic period. I had planned to go to India, and one of the reasons I wanted to go, I wanted to see the trees in India. So I was, you know, very disappointed when I wasn't able to go, but hopefully things will be better in the next year or so.
And the tiger reserves are still full of trees, so make sure you get to a couple of the tiger reserves. And saving tigers, they're also saving forests, which is a fabulous combination.
Well, Dr. Meg Lohman, I think you are wonderful. The new book, of course, well, what can I say? Whenever there's a book by National Geographic, I'm happy that to help promote it and help talk about it. This particular book, National Geographic Kids Almanac 2023, is beautiful. If you don't have a kid in your life, buy this book, order this book online, and send it to a hospital, a children's hospital near you, or to St. Jude's, or to Shriners Hospital, because the hospital need books. During the pandemic, of course, they weren't taking any books. I don't know if they started, but they always need books for kids. And one of the greatest things you can do is send a kid a book.
Yes, what a brilliant idea. Well, thanks so much for sharing all of our tree exploration on your show today.
Well, thank you so much, Dr. Meg Lohman. I think you're fantastic. You are definitely the Einstein of trees. And what else? A real-life Lorax, they call you. I think you're wonderful. I think you're fantastic. Anybody who loves trees is a friend of mine. And I just want to thank you so much for being on Joy on Paper today.
Oh, such a pleasure. You take care and enjoy your trees.
Okay. Thank you. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
Okay, and you can get this book online and, of course, at bookstores all over the place because it is truly a National Geographic book, and bookstores carry these books because they are so beautiful. We're going to play a quick commercial, and then we'll be right back.
Are you ready to eliminate your home energy bill? Well, get ready to harness the sun. Go EHS, Effective Solar Solutions, by Efficient Home Services. With no upfront costs, you can save money on your utility bill and even eliminate your electric bill altogether with EHS Solar. Call EHS, the number one solar installer nationwide. We know how to customize your home. EHS handles every project in-house with no subcontractors. Remember, no upfront costs, tax breaks, and the best company in the business, Efficient Home Services. Schedule an appointment today at 727-353-3757. Visit our website and download your free buyer's guide to going solar at www.goehs.com. Go solar, go savings, go EHS. Call 727-353-3757 today to talk to our experts.
Oh, boy, I'm back, and I have a very, very special guest, Rejection, rejection, rejection. Anybody who has ever written has been rejected. Anybody who has drawn a cartoon for the New Yorker, if they are not rejected, they're very lucky. So I am so happy that I am talking to somebody today who has not been rejected. Matthew Diffie has not only... Has he been on? Oh, gosh, it makes me sick. Are you there, Matthew?
I am here.
The best of the rejection collection. 297 cartoons that were too dark, too weird, or too dirty for the New Yorker. Now, I want to know, Matthew, why I am not in this book. Because I never got an official rejection, but I have submitted to the New Yorker. It has been a dream of my life.
Well, we got to talk because there will be future volumes.
Well, do you think they have it somewhere around there? Do they keep them that long ago?
No.
No?
There's so many cartoons coming in. I don't even know how many cartoons like are like regular, but over 100, probably 300. And we're all doing, you know, 5 or 10 a week. So the turnover is massive. So who knows?
And I didn't put my real name on it either. So they... Because it was, I don't know, I submitted three of them.
Is absolutely, yeah?
Yeah.
Do you remember them?
Oh, yeah.
Talk about them?
I still have them.
Private.
No.
Yeah.
I could never figure out exactly why, but why did, well, could I say, why did they take you and not me? I want to add one thing.
Yeah.
I love a man in a cowboy hat. That's what I told CJ Box when I first saw him. I said to CJ Box, man, I love a man in a cowboy hat. And so I am looking right now at a picture of you in a cowboy hat. I don't know.
I'm wearing a cowboy hat right now.
Are you? Oh, I love it. Oh, that makes me so happy. That's fantastic.
There's one within reach, I suppose. Yeah.
Wow. So you have put together another collection here of rejections. Rejections.
Yep.
Now, how many of your cartoons were actually published?
I've had over 300 at this point. I've been doing it for 20-plus years. And, you know, as I said, there's a lot of us doing a lot of cartoons. So there's a ton, piles and piles of rejected cartoons. And most of them are you know, perfectly reasonable New Yorker cartoons that there just wasn't room for, but every now and then we do really outrageous stuff that's totally inappropriate for the New Yorker. And that's what these books are. We took sort of the best of our worst and put them in these books. It's a chance for you to see, like, the cartoonist who you normally see in the New Yorker doing something totally different.
I love it. And I love all of the frequently asked questions. I love it.
Yeah. Yeah, beyond just the cartoons, I wanted people to get to know who these people were, because I'm lucky enough to be friends with them, but most people don't know them as people. So I gave them all this kind of ridiculous questionnaire that they all had to fill out. And to me, that became one of the most fun parts of the book, to see how different cartoonists answer the same question in totally inventive and funny ways.
Well, they are very funny. So not only do you have the fun of reading the cartoons, and some of them are actually quite quite risque. Let's put it that way.
Mm-hmm.
So I can see why they were
pushing the envelope.
That's it, definitely. Some of them I still don't understand. that happens. I'm looking at the one. I don't know. I look at them, and I sometimes can't figure out why they were rejected. They look perfectly okay to me, but you know. So tell us a little bit. Well, I'm going to ask you. You know, since you're here, I'll ask you one of the questions. Where do you get your ideas?
From my head is what I always say. But honestly, I get them from anywhere. Any way that I can get them. I do sit down with a cup of coffee and a blank sheet of paper every day, and, you know, for 2 hours or so, I just sort of start something, whatever first pops into my head, and then follow it, take it apart, and put it back together, and you know, usually I get a few ideas just randomly thinking through concepts and stuff. But I also get them, you know, occasionally when I'm walking around, I'll hear somebody say something, and maybe it's not a complete cartoon as they said it, but I can put it in a different context and change it. Anything. I can get inspiration from old cartoons or from even flipping through the dictionary if you need to. Whatever gets you kind of going, and then you just drum up ideas. I don't know. It's part of the craft and the work of being a cartoonist.
So do you ever sit, like, in a coffee shop and, you know, listen in on other people's conversations?
I do not do that very much, but I do know cartoonists who love to work in coffee shops and eavesdropping, but also they just like, I think, working in the hubbub, you know, as opposed to complete silence, which I prefer.
Oh, okay.
So. And some people doodle, you know, will doodle their way. Like Roz Chast has told me that she likes to just start drawing something and then sees where it goes and then gets a caption later. There's a bunch of different ways to do it, but I'll try everything at least once.
when you when you got the idea for this, when you started it, I'm sure people thought, well, okay, can we make a book out of it? That, and you have managed to really come out, I think, with a book that people will enjoy reading. The questions, as I said, they're intriguing, and you want to sort of know a little bit more about the artists. I have a few, you know, favorite artists over the years that I've, you know, gone back to, and I keep trying to figure out how in the world they've done it, which is always a lot of fun when you're looking at a cartoon.
Mm. Yeah, to me, that's the beauty of these books. They have the one level you can skim through and read all the cartoons in half an hour, and then you can go back in and delve into these questionnaire sections. And they're full of jokes and just really examples of great creative thinking. And in some cases, like, very twisted thinking. But that's what these cartoon books are. They're a chance for the cartoonists to do whatever they want without needing to fit into the New Yorker's very specific brand. But we have a lot of fun doing it.
So how does it work in the New Yorker? How do they select the... What's the process?
There's a cartoon editor. Yeah, there's a cartoon editor who is Emma Allen, and she is the first person to look at all the cartoons that come in. And then I think she takes a winnowed down stack to the main editor, David Remnick, and the two of them make the final decisions on what maybe 12 or 15 cartoons will go in the next issue. Or they don't really buy them per, you know, to go in that week, but they'll buy a certain number each week so that they have a supply. But I think that's basically how it happens. They just look at them and pick them.
Wow. Mm-hmm. I think I'm going to try submit. So what's the submission process for new people? They can just send them in?
Yeah, you can just send them to Emma Allen. I think it's pretty public, her email address and stuff. They may have a portal, I think, now that you submit things through. I don't know if you get, you never really got feedback or any word back. You only know if you sold.
Yeah.
So if you hear nothing, that means you were rejected. But, I mean, rejection is absolutely par for the course.
Well, I mean, one of the reasons I submitted, I was just hoping I'd get a rejection letter.
Mm.
It would have been nice.
They used to do that.
Yeah, I think they used to do it.
Years, though.
Yeah.
Been decades, I think.
Probably. Well, that's one of the problems also with query letters nowadays. You're doing it all on this computerized, blocks
right.
of stuff.
Systems.
It's not the same. It's not fun like getting a real proper rejection letter written on really lovely paper.
Yeah.
Signed by some
wallpaper the wall with.
Yeah, I wish I had thought of that in those days. Well, as a matter of fact, there are a few authors. I think actually there's a market for rejection letters. You can buy them on eBay.
Of course.
Yeah. So you can have a collection.
You get your own, you buy someone else's.
Yeah, because nowadays
it's another kind of rejection collection.
Exactly. I mean, that's that would be nice because in the old days it used to be on really nice bond paper, you know, that nice.
Right.
And they signed it with real ink pens, and it was really, I thought, it was nice. But I never saved
it. They turned that nice yellow brown color.
Yeah, yeah. It would really line a bathroom very nicely.
Mm-hmm.
So, for you, having this many, you've had some independent shows with all of your artwork?
Do you mean with cartoon artwork?
Yeah.
Or?
Yeah, cartoons.
Yeah, we've been able to do some exhibits. There was a museum up in San Francisco, Cartoon Art Museum. We did an exhibit there. A few other small things. It's kind of nice to put cartoons up in a gallery setting and hear the people walking around and actually chuckling, laughing at art.
Yeah, I think so. I think it would be wonderful. I'd love it. I haven't seen one here. Well, we don't have a lot of art. We don't have a lot of art here. So, I think would be great. Now, when you were, I suppose, how many of these people are friends of yours? they're all competing with you.
Oh, all of them. Yeah, all of them. I was in New York for 12 years, and so we would all go to lunch after dropping our stuff off at the magazine. Some of the newer people I've only met over Zoom or over the phone. But there's kind of an immediate connection between cartoonists. We're sort of a unique breed, and kind of a camaraderie between us, because we've all been doing the same thing, and not just the rejection, but the struggle of coming up with ideas. It's a very bonding sort of craft, I think. So,
well, I think you've done a wonderful job.
Hang out.
I think it's a fun book. As a matter of fact, I'm going to do a special thing for this book. I think it would make a wonderful Father's Day gift. I really think people should give this to a lot of people would really enjoy getting this book, because you always, you know, so often people are looking at what kind of book to get for Father's Day, and there's enough in here, and with a little bit of the naughty humor, I think this would be a great Father's Day gift.
I agree. It's a great one just to pick up and flip to any page and get a quick old chuckle and then peruse it later. It's not a burden that you have to get through.
That's it.
It makes a great toilet side book.
Well, I'm not going there, because I have a thing. If anybody in my house brought a book into the toilet, they would be history. This is not allowed. Well, of course, that's comes from the days when I was a kid. We still had an outhouse. So I grew up in northern Michigan. Yeah. Just to put it in perspective, I grew up in northern Michigan, and we spent our summers at the camp, and we had an outhouse.
I would say strictly indoor toilet room.
Yeah, so we were not allowed to bring a book into the outhouse. It's a lot of fun. I think it's a great book. You've done a terrific job. And isn't it nice that you can make a living doing something that you really love?
Yeah, and it's even more fun when you can kind of get the vindication of, like, digging these lost gems back out and showing them to the world, because otherwise they would never be seen. You know, we have these piles, and they're just disappear from view forever. So,
well,
with the rejection collection, they live.
I don't know. I wonder if maybe there is a hidden pile there where you can dig through, and I could tell you my pen name, and if you found it, it would be like a real collector's item now that I'm a famous radio host. Maybe they would publish it. This would be really nice. Anyway, I love The New Yorker. I love reading. I love reading The New Yorker, but I always do the cartoons first.
Of course.
I think that doesn't everybody who reads The New Yorker, I think they do the cartoons first, because you guys are really important.
I'm sure of it.
Okay. Well, thank you, Matthew Diffie, for being on Joy on Paper. The name of the book is The Best of the Rejection Collection, 297 cartoons that were too dark, too weird, or too dirty for The New Yorker. Thank you, Matthew. It was great talking to you.
Thank you. Likewise. Enjoy your day.
Okay. Did you have a website or something you want people to see, or are you on Facebook?
People should find us on social media. That's the best place.
Social media, because cartoonists are social, and Matthew is great, and he looks super in a cowboy hat. Thank you, Matthew.
Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye-bye now.
All right. Thank you. Bye.
All right. What a book. And that's the end. I don't have any time even to... Ed's going to salute me. Right, Ed? Big Ed's going to salute me. I salute him, because I need a salute, because I'm going to have a great weekend. Everybody, you have a great weekend. Bye-bye now.